Welcome to VOA Asia Weekend, your weekly look back at the major news in the past week. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. This weekend, we present to you a chronologic look into two major stories we've been covering. The Wuhan coronavirus took up many of the headlines. Many of the others were focusing on the trial on impeachment charges against the U.S. President Donald Trump. So let's go back to the beginning of the week. China will seek to boost its economy Monday as it battles the impact of the coronavirus outbreak. And in the Philippines, the first death from the virus outside China is reported. David Doyle has more.
China on Sunday ramped up measures to contain the coronavirus epidemic and shore up the economy against its effects, as the first death from the illness was reported outside the country. A 44-year-old Chinese man from Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, died in the Philippines on Saturday, the Department of Health said.
Of course it's frightening. It really is frightening because the virus will spread.
The Philippines has expanded its travel ban to include all foreigners coming from China, and Beijing is facing mounting isolation as other countries introduce similar travel restrictions. Airlines suspend flights and governments evacuate their citizens. That risks worsening a slowdown in the world's second largest economy. China's central bank said it will inject $173.8 billion worth of liquidity into the markets on Monday as the country prepares to reopen its stock markets following an extended Lunar New Year holiday. As of Sunday, there have been more than 300 coronavirus deaths in China, and the city of Wuhan has been effectively quarantined, with roads sealed off and public transport shut down. State media said one of two new hospitals in Wuhan dedicated to coronavirus patients was completed on Sunday. More than 100 Germans and family members landed in Frankfurt on Saturday after being evacuated from Wuhan, and around 250 Indonesians were evacuated from Hubei province. Japan and Russia will start moving their nationals out later in the week. Cases have been reported in more than two dozen countries, including the United States, Japan, Australia, and Britain. Meanwhile, doctors in Thailand say they have seen success in treating severe cases of coronavirus using a combination of medications for flu and HIV. They said the approach had shown a vast improvement in the conditions of several patients in their care after 48 hours.
That is Reuters' David Doyle reporting. The death toll in China rose by 45 to 304, and the number of cases worldwide claimed past 14,500, according to China's National Health Commission and other nations. The vast majority of those infected are in China. About 150 cases have been reported in two dozen other countries. The U.S. has recorded eight cases now. With no end in sight to the outbreak, authorities in Hubei and elsewhere have extended the Lunar New Year holiday break due to end this week well into February, trying to keep people at home and reduce the spread of the virus. All Hubei schools are postponing the opening of the new semester until further notice. Despite the drastic travel restrictions at home, China has chafed at those imposed by foreign governments, criticizing Washington's order barring entry to most non-citizens who visited China over the past 2 weeks. Apart from damaging China's international reputation, such steps could worsen a domestic economy already growing at its lowest rate in decades. The Trump administration's national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, said on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday that the Chinese so far have been more transparent, certainly, than in past crises, and we appreciate that, and we continue to offer assistance to the Chinese. But right now, he said, there is no reasons for American to panic. There is something that is a low risk, we think, in the United States. For many months, thousands upon thousands of people in Hong Kong have marched and in many instances fought against their local government and its relationship with the Chinese government in Beijing. Much of that has apparently changed over the past few weeks as the Wuhan virus has taken hold of the headlines. Joining us from Hong Kong is Renxin, a correspondent for VOA's Mandarin service. Renxin, how has that situation changed?
The impact is pretty obvious. We're not seeing any organized, large-scale rallies or protests, I think, since January 19. So that was the global sanctions rally which of course ended in clashes between the police and the protesters. So that was the last major protest we have seen. But that doesn't mean the protests are over. In fact, I mean, a lot of people are saying that it's just taking a different form because we're still seeing a lot of protests and the gatherings, which are, some of them are focused on how the government is handling the virus, the Wuhan virus outbreak. This is considered a public health crisis because a lot of people in Hong Kong still remember 2003, the SARS epidemic, in which 299 people died in Hong Kong. So there's actually today I went to a protest. It's a community protest. People are protesting against the government's plan to open a quarantine facility in their community. So one thing they're saying is, first of all, the government did not consult with the local community before they made the plan. The second of all, they are very angry with the government because people in Hong Kong have been calling for the government to close all the border crossings between mainland China and Hong Kong. And also we are seeing a lot of people like lining up for surgical masks. So they're saying like even the government even are not doing a good job in just meet the basic demand of the people.
I have heard, and tell me if I'm wrong, that there was talk of a strike of healthcare workers?
Yes, yes. The healthcare workers union, they had a vote last night. So so most people voted for the strike. So today they demanded the chief executive to sit down and talk with them, but the chief executive said no. So most likely tomorrow, some of the healthcare workers will go on strike. So that's something we need to keep an eye on. You can sense the people are very angry with the government handling of this crisis. And also, a lot of the protesters tell me that this crisis or the outbreak kind of brought together the blue camp and the yellow camp. Because in Hong Kong, the yellow camp means the pro-democracy, anti-government protesters, or people who support the protests. And the blue camp means the people who are pro-government, pro-police. So this, when they go on the street, like to protest against this government plan or the quarantine facility, so you can tell it's people from the local community, and some of them are not in support with of the democracy protest. So people are saying like, hey, well, now we are, it doesn't matter whether you're yellow or blue, so we're all like green. You put blue and yellow together, So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting development because a lot of people from the pro-government citizens are now also dissatisfied with how the government handled this crisis.
What about foreigners who were in Hong Kong? Can they get out? Are they getting out? What's the situation?
Oh, the situation is, I don't have a lot of statistics, but what I heard is some airlines are canceling their flights because pilots who refuse to fly to Hong Kong. So that means there's no returning flight. So people who want to get out of Hong Kong, say like going to the United States on a certain airline, but there's no returning flight, so they are stuck here. But of course, you can go with another airline. You just have to be like, if you can get out of Hong Kong, just do it early. So we don't know what the situation will be like in a few days.
Well, good luck to you. I hope you are healthy and stay that way. Ren Xin is a correspondent for VOA's Mandarin service, joining us from Hong Kong. Nearly a month after the expiration of a U.S.-South Korea defense cost-sharing agreement, there is growing frustration among South Korean civilians working on U.S. bases who will soon go unpaid if a deal isn't reached. As VOA's Bill Gallo reports, there are also concerns the dispute is hurting the alliance.
Camp Humphreys, south of Seoul, is the largest overseas U.S. military base. But many operations here could soon be disrupted over a dispute on how to split the cost of the U.S. military presence. The U.S. military notified Korean employees they may be forced to take unpaid leave starting April 1st. The furlough could affect 9,000 Korean civilians on U.S. bases. That means construction projects and other services may be paused. Many Korean workers say they're looking for other jobs.
Of course, everyone feels unstable and distressed. We hope it doesn't happen. It is our livelihood at stake, after all.
Sun Ji-o works for the USFK Korean Employees Labor Union.
All employees are essential to the mission. So why do we have to be the ones who are suffering?
President Donald Trump has long accused South Korea of not paying enough for U.S. protection. Those accusations make many South Koreans uneasy, especially as the dispute drags on.
It isn't right to hold hostage the salaries of Korean employees just for the sake of the negotiations.
Song Young-gil is a member of South Korea's National Assembly, which must ratify any eventual cost-sharing deal.
For us, we cannot accept the unreasonable demand of $5 billion. We cannot yield to their bluffing.
It's not just South Koreans warning the alliance may be hurt. Even some U.S. officials are asking questions.
This is a part of our message to our State Department colleagues that as you're approaching these negotiations and everyone wants equitable burden sharing, some consideration just needs to be given about maintaining the health of that alliance as we go forward.
U.S. Embassy officials here in Seoul say there's no evidence that the cost-sharing dispute has hurt the U.S.-South Korea alliance. They point to opinion polls suggesting that support for the relationship remains strong. But the big question is, how long will that last? Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The Republican-majority U.S. Senate defeated a Democratic attempt Friday to call new witnesses in the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. That defeat, but all brings deliberations in the trial to a close, with senators expected to acquit Trump of two charges, including allegations that he abused the power of his office by leveraging USAID to Ukraine to benefit his own personal political interest. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Democrats tried and failed.
Mr. Moran. No.
To call additional witnesses they said would support their case. Trump abused the power of the presidency and obstructed Congress's efforts to investigate his actions.
What we are asking you to do on behalf of the American people is simple. Use your sole power to try impeachment by holding a fair trial. Get the documents they refuse to provide to the House. Here are the witnesses they refuse to make available to the House, just as this body has done in every single impeachment trial until now. Let the American people know that you understand they deserve the truth.
That push for new witnesses accelerated earlier this week with revelations from John Bolton's book. The former national security advisor claiming Trump personally told him U.S. aid to Ukraine was tied to investigations into political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter.
John Bolton could corroborate the rest of our evidence and confirm the president's guilt. So today, senators, we come before you and we argue again that you let this witness and the other key witnesses we have identified come forward so you have all of the information available to you when you make this consequential decision.
But the president's attorneys argued House impeachment managers should have done the work of interviewing witnesses during their investigation, not in the Senate trial.
That's not the way that this chamber should allow impeachments to be presented to it.
Trump denies the Bolton allegations and has maintained the loyalty of Republican senators who said the hold on Ukraine aid was temporary and so could not be an impeachable offense.
They got the money. There was no investigation of the Bidens. Is this the conduct, even though inappropriate, that shakes the foundation of a democracy? I say not.
Republican Senators Mitt Romney and Susan Collins did join with Democrats in the push for witnesses, but that ultimately was not enough for a move an overwhelming majority of Americans said they wanted to happen.
The president may have won the battle. The president has been a president, so men may have won the battle. As the truth comes out in the days ahead, and it will, they will lose the war.
The Senate delayed the final vote that will either acquit Trump of the charges or remove him from office until next week.
The motion is not agreed to.
Senators set to give final speeches explaining their vote Monday, the same day as the Iowa caucuses, the first nominating contest in the 2020 presidential election, with a final vote set for Wednesday, just a day after Trump gives his State of the Union speech to Congress. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
We continue now. The first votes of the 2020 U.S. presidential election will be cast on Monday when the state of Iowa holds its first in the national caucuses. For the past 50 years, America's political parties have used a series of caucuses and primary elections to determine their presidential nominee. VOA's Steve Reddish explains the process.
Imagine holding more than 1,000 meetings all on the same day at the same time. That's what it's like to hold a caucus in a state such as Iowa. Every voting precinct in the state of Iowa has a designated meeting place, such as schools and libraries. On caucus day, people go to those meetings to discuss and declare publicly and openly their support for a particular presidential candidate. The results are tabulated, and delegates are awarded to the candidates according to party rules. Political parties in six states will hold a caucus in 2020: Iowa, Nevada, Kentucky, Hawaii, North Dakota, and Wyoming. Most well known is the Iowa caucus. Since 1972, Iowa has been the nation's first caucus. Its results are dissected, providing the first tangible evidence of support for any of the candidates.
There's no question I've got competitors with a near home field advantage.
Iowa's 2020 caucus will be held on the evening of February 3rd. The focus is on the Democrats because U.S. President Donald Trump, with token opposition, is almost assured the Republican nomination at the party's August convention. Unlike the open nature of a caucus, voting in a primary election is private and done in a voting booth. The votes are tabulated, and delegates are awarded to candidates according to party rules. More than 40 states will hold a primary election in 2020. New Hampshire state law mandates it hold the nation's first primary. This year, it takes place on February 11th. Because they are the first to cast votes, Iowa and New Hampshire attract more attention than more populous, more diverse states with more delegates at stake. A criticism of the current system is that Iowa and New Hampshire are overwhelmingly white. Presidential hopefuls spend months commuting between the two states, visiting restaurants, state fairs, and town hall meetings in an effort to meet as many voters as possible. For the candidates who survive Iowa and New Hampshire, their next big test is March 3rd, 2020, known as Super Tuesday because of the number of states that hold primaries on that day, 14. Among them, America's two most populous states, California and Texas. About 30% of the delegates for each party's convention are at stake on Super Tuesday. Primary elections continue through the first week of June. Usually, one candidate clinches the nomination earlier than that. making the party convention in the summer a crowning moment, along with the naming of the candidate's choice of a vice president. But if no candidate clinches the nomination during the caucuses and primaries, a contested convention would produce a summer political drama. Steve Reddish, VOA News.
This is VOA Asia Weekend. China's top leadership Monday admitted shortcomings and difficulties in its response to the coronavirus outbreak as state media said a new hospital built at breakneck pace began receiving patients in the epicenter of the crisis. 57 new deaths were confirmed Monday, the single biggest daily increase since the virus was detected late last year in the central city of Wuhan. The death toll in China stood at 361. That exceeds the 349 mainland fatalities from the severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, outbreak of 2002 and 3, which eventually killed nearly 800. The government of Beijing nevertheless hit out at the United States for sparking panic with its response to the coronavirus, including a ban on foreigners who have recently been to China. The virus has so far spread to more than 20 countries, and several other nations have instituted similarly tough rules. The number of cases of the virus in the United States has risen. Dr. Nancy Meissonier is with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. She says they have seen several new cases.
The new cases include one patient identified in Massachusetts and four more patients in California. Four of the five patients have travel history to Wuhan, China. One patient in California is a close household contact of another patient in California.
The World Health Organization has declared the crisis a global health emergency, and the first foreign death from the virus was confirmed in the Philippines Sunday. As the coronavirus continues to spread worldwide, many countries, including the United States, are denying entry to all foreign visitors who had recently been to China as part of a global effort to stop the spread. VOA's Lada Tsahok reports people returning home from China are being quarantined.
The death of the first patient outside China puts additional pressure on health authorities worldwide to boost measures to protect their citizens. The United States, Australia, and an increasing number of other countries have barred the arrival of foreigners from China, but they cannot bar their own citizens from returning home. France has set up two quarantine centers where its citizens have to spend 2 weeks under observation before they can go home.
We are obviously monitoring the health situation of each of these people very closely, and everything is organized to ensure that there are no infections should any occur.
More than 300 people have died in the coronavirus outbreak in China, most of them in the central Hubei province. More than 14,000 people have been infected in 24 countries. Health authorities believe the virus can reproduce and exist inside the digestive tract, but have not yet determined how it is spread.
In Wuhan, Shenzhen, and even in the first virus cases in the United States, they detected new coronavirus in feces of the patients. This phenomenon indicates that the virus can reproduce and exist inside the digestive tract, but whether the virus is spread through fecal-oral transmission or through droplets containing the virus that forms an aerosol and then spreads, this requires epidemiological research to confirm.
Italian scientists say they have isolated the DNA sequence of the new coronavirus. The findings were made at the Lazzaro Spallanzani National Institute for Infectious Diseases, which was treating a couple of Chinese visitors who were sickened by the virus.
Having isolated the virus means that we'll have many more opportunities to study it, to understand it, and to better test what can be proved effective to contain its spread.
Italian Health Minister Roberto Speranza told reporters Sunday the findings would be shared with the international community. The Chinese couple have been Italy's only two cases of the virus. The rest of Europe has confirmed more than 20 patients infected by the new strain. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
All but one of the 57 new deaths reported Monday were in Wuhan, the rest of Hubei province, most of which has been under lockdown for almost 2 weeks. In Wuhan, where the virus is believed to have jumped from animals to a market into humans, authorities have been racing to build two new hospitals to treat the infected. The first of those, a 1,000-bed facility, began to receive patients Monday, according to the People's Daily, just 10 days after construction had started. The second hospital is due to open later this week. The coronavirus that started in Wuhan, China, is taking an increasing economic toll, shutting down businesses, curbing international travel, and impacting production lines of major global brands. The Shanghai stock market plunged almost 8% Monday on the first day of trading since the holiday as investors played catch-up with last week's global retreat. In Wuhan, which has been transformed from a bustling industrial hub into a near ghost town, residents have been living in deep fear of catching the virus. The city's medical facilities have been overwhelmed, with Xinhua reporting that 68 medical teams of 8,300 staff had been sent to Hubei. The industrial city of Wenzhou, 800 kilometers to the east, was placed under a similar lockdown to Wuhan on Sunday. It's 9 million people ordered to stay indoors. The emergence of the virus coincided with the Lunar New Year, when hundreds of millions traveled across the country for family reunions. Originally scheduled to end last Friday, the holiday was extended by 3 days to give authorities more time to deal with the crisis. But some major cities, including Shanghai, extended it again, and many schools and universities have delayed the start of new terms. Many nations have evacuated hundreds of their citizens from China, with some forcing them into quarantine on their return, and more airlines are canceling services to the mainland. China's foreign ministry Monday criticized the United States for being among the first to evacuate nationals without providing substantial assistance to China. The U.S. actions had caused panic, said a spokeswoman. The director general of the World Health Organization is urging countries not to close their borders to foreigners in response to the virus outbreak. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United States, Australia, Singapore, and a growing number of other countries are denying entry to foreigners traveling from China in an effort to limit the spread of the deadly coronavirus. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says 151 cases of the disease and one death have been confirmed in 23 countries outside China. He says the small number of cases can be managed without countries resorting to extreme measures.
There is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade. We call on all countries to implement decisions that are evidence-based and consistent. WHO stands ready to provide advice to any country that's considering which measures to take.
Last week, WHO declared the coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern and issued several recommendations to prevent and limit the further spread of the virus. Tedros says the disease was mainly declared a global health threat out of concern that countries with weaker health systems would have difficulty in containing the virus, which can spread from person to person. As such, he says one of the recommendations is for international support to countries with fragile health systems. He says other recommendations include efforts to accelerate the development of vaccines and medicines, as well as measures to combat the spread of rumors and misinformation.
Review preparedness plans, identify gaps, and evaluate the resources needed to identify, isolate, and care for cases and prevent transmission. Both the coronavirus preparedness, not panic.
Tedros says only solidarity and cooperation among all countries will defeat the coronavirus outbreak. He says everyone is in this together, and the only way to stop the virus from spreading is by working together. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Mongolia, Russia, and Nepal have closed their land borders, while semi-autonomous Hong Kong announced Monday it was closing all but two land crossings. Also Monday, the Cruise Lines International Association, which represents some of the world's largest operators, said vessels will deny boarding to passengers and crew who have recently traveled to China. U.S. House Democrats prosecuting the impeachment case against President Donald Trump and his defense team offered their closing arguments Monday at his Senate trial, even as his acquittal remains all but certain. VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson joins us from Capitol Hill. Catherine, what's been the stances taken by those who brought the impeachment to the Senate and those who were defending the president?
Well, you know, remember, it's interesting that we're having these closing arguments up on Capitol Hill today because, of course, today also marks the very first day and the very first nominating contest in the 2020 presidential election, which actually figured pretty largely in the president's defense. They're making the argument that impeachment is actually a subversion of American democracy, and that because we're already into the 2020 election cycle, the American voters should be the ones who make the decision, and that it's absolutely out of bounds for Democrats to try this impeachment case, which would effectively take President Trump off the ballot in 2020. You know, of course, Democrats will tell you that the election is also pushing them forward. They're saying that because President Trump allegedly invited foreign election interference, they have this pushing need to prosecute the impeachment case and to make sure that he doesn't meddle with the election process in November. So really a lot of talk about the election up here on Capitol Hill and a sense of a pressing need on both sides.
Well, is there any way that the Democrats, to many people's view, presented a very pressing and believable scenario? Do you think they made any impression whatsoever on any Republicans, any indication of that whatsoever?
Well, I don't think that they changed any Republican minds. And actually, we've just heard from a moderate swing state Democrat, Joe Manchin, who represents West Virginia, which has a lot of the president's supporters living there. He actually just took to the Senate floor and said that, well, he doesn't find the president's July 25th phone call with Ukrainian President Zelensky a perfect phone call by any means. He is still undecided about how he is going to vote on impeachment on Wednesday. And, you know, look, that tells you something, is that somebody who is in this swing state, who is trying to represent a lot of the president's supporters, is still on the fence after months of investigation, after months of this being litigated out in public. He's still making up his mind.
Well, Manchin represents a state with many, many people in the coal industry, which is not right in the best shape. So I guess that's a little understandable. So what happens next?
So what happens next is that senators continue to take to the Senate floor to talk through their decisions on their impeachment vote. Remember, these are senators who have been sitting for two and a half weeks and not been allowed to talk except through those written questions that they handed through to the House impeachment managers and the president's counsel. So this is really their first time to get up in front of the cameras, as is important for senators to do, and really talk through this decision-making process. They'll be doing that through tonight. They'll be doing that tomorrow, Tuesday, even as the Capitol prepares for the annual State of the Union address. And then on Wednesday at 4 p.m., this all finally comes to a close when they make that final vote on impeachment.
And VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson will be there. That means you will as well. Catherine mentioned the Iowa caucuses, which is the first step as far as selecting a Democratic, well, Republican too, but that goes without saying. It's going to be Trump. But as far as Democrats are concerned, that is that's open, and we're going to explore that in just a moment. Thanks again for being here, Catherine.
You're so welcome.
You're listening to VOA Asia Weekend. In Washington, I'm Ira Melman. Democrats in the state of Iowa began the 2020 presidential primary campaign Monday with its presidential caucus voting, but the Iowa Democratic Party said the official results were delayed for hours due to what was described as quality checks. A new mobile app was supposed to help Democratic officials quickly gather information from some 1,700 caucus sites throughout Iowa. Instead, what was called a coding issue within the app is being blamed for delays that left the results unknown after the first in the nation presidential nominating contest. The company that contracted with Iowa Democrats to build the app accepted responsibility, but said the underlying data it collected was sound and accurate. The Democratic contenders did address their supporters in Iowa, despite the glitch, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
Among those confident in the Iowa results was a newcomer to the national political stage, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
We know by the time it's all said and done, Iowa, you have shocked the nation because by all indications, we are going on to New Hampshire victorious.
Also expecting a favorable result was Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who narrowly lost the Iowa vote to Hillary Clinton 4 years ago.
Today marks the beginning of the end for Donald Trump. And all of that hatred, all of that divisiveness is going to end when together we are in the White House.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, often seen as the national frontrunner, is already looking ahead to next week's New Hampshire primary.
We're going to walk out of here with our share of delegates. We don't know exactly what it is yet, but we feel good about where we are. And look, so it's on to New Hampshire.
Another candidate looking for momentum in New Hampshire is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
That we will always be a stronger party and a stronger nation when we unite around our shared values to advance justice and expand opportunity to everyone.
Warren, Sanders, and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar were limited in campaigning in recent weeks because they were attending the Senate impeachment trial alone of President Trump.
Even in a crowded field of candidates, during the well-earned impeachment hearing of Donald J. Trump, which kept me bolted to my Senate desk for the last 2 weeks, we kept fighting. And you kept fighting for me.
All around Iowa, Democrats turned out in high numbers to attend local caucus meetings and line up for the candidate of their choice. And now the contenders head to New Hampshire for the next campaign test next Tuesday. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
The Chinese territory of Hong Kong announced Tuesday its first death from the coronavirus, a man returning from Wuhan, China, the epicenter of the outbreak. Meantime, Chinese scientists said in a just-released study the new virus that has killed at least 425 people in China may have originated in bats. Chinese officials say they don't know exactly how the virus could have been transmitted from animals to people, but believe open-air markets in China where wild and domesticated animals are sold may be a contributor. China accused the United States of whipping up panic over the fast-spread coronavirus with travel restrictions and evacuations as Chinese stocks plunged on the first day back from the extended Lunar New Year holiday. David Dollar is an expert on the global economy at the Brookings Institution in Washington. He disagrees.
The Chinese stock market was closed for 10 days over the Lunar New Year, so when it opened on Monday, it was just catching up with the rest of the world. It dropped about 8%. There's so much uncertainty, that seems like a reasonable move. So I think the Chinese are scapegoating the U.S. government. If they want to find someone at fault, they could point the finger at themselves because they sat on this information for about 7 weeks before they started doing anything. So we're a little bit behind the curve.
As of early Tuesday, the number of confirmed cases exceeded 20,000. The World Health Organization says the outbreak of the new coronavirus has not yet reached the level of a pandemic, though it is being detected in more countries. At a news conference Tuesday in Geneva, the WHO's Director of Epidemic and Pandemic Diseases, Dr. Sylvie Briand, told reporters the outbreak is at the phase where it is an epidemic with multiple foci. Briand said one of the problems with outbreaks like this one is misinformation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Health officials say a disease epidemic is likely to quickly generate an epidemic of information. This is not unusual, they explain, because at the start of an outbreak, a lot is unknown about the nature of the disease and the risks it entails. Unfortunately, they say, the search for answers often triggers a lot of misinformation and harmful rumors. Sylvie Briand is the director of WHO's Global Infectious Hazard Preparedness Unit. She says trying to deal with the mass of false information and rumors circulating on social media is challenging.
A few centuries ago, this phenomenon existed as well, but at that time there was no social media, and so the information was spreading as well, but much lower than now. Now the information is spreading very fast and is amplified immediately in every corner of the world, basically. And so for us also, this speed is very difficult to address in a timely manner.
WHO is teaming up with Google, which has launched a new project called SOS Alert. The system allows people to easily access key and correct information about the coronavirus. It says other social media platforms, including Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok, also are taking steps to limit the spread of misinformation. Briand tells VOA that getting the right message out to the public is not always easy.
But I think it's a challenge of the 21st century, because we are all beneficiaries of those extremely intense and fast communication, but also we could be the victims of it. So I think this is why it's very important to characterize the phenomenon and to develop methods to tackle it appropriately.
Briand says confronting false information head-on is not censorship. Rather, she says, it is a way of responding to people's concerns in the best way possible, given the evidence that exists at the moment. As evidence and understanding about the new coronavirus grow, she says more and better information will become available. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As of Tuesday, at least 425 people, the majority in mainland China, have died from the coronavirus since it was first detected in December in the central Chinese city of Wuhan. With a total number of confirmed infections exceeding 20,000, there are about 150 confirmed cases in 23 other countries, including one death in the Philippines, the first outside China. VOA Asia continues. As public health officials grapple with the coronavirus, some Chinese Americans worry that there will be a backlash against their community as fears of the illness turn into fear of Chinese people. From San Francisco, Michelle Quinn reports.
In San Francisco's Chinatown, the Leon White Crane Dragon and Lion Dance Group is visiting businesses to bless them as part of the Lunar New Year celebration. It's a joyful time of year, even though in China, the coronavirus has shut down travel in and out of the country.
For us, we haven't been really impacted by it. I noticed some people have taken precautions, but for the most part, all of the community of Chinatown doesn't seem too worried about it.
As public health officials grapple with the outbreak, there are also concerns about misinformation on social media and a backlash against Asians. It's something Chinese Americans have faced before.
We're seeing a lot of very viral materials, whether that, you know, those are videos or memes or jokes and things like that. And I think it's still perpetuating stereotypes that's been happening since the Chinese first came to America in mid-1800.
Some of those memes and jokes may be in fun, but they can also stigmatize not just Chinese Americans, but anyone perceived as Asian, Leon says.
There is a tendency in our country's history to enact very racist or xenophobic policy on the basis of public health and safety. And I think for our community, there's a very fine line between trying to protect yourself and without antagonizing someone.
A recent post from the University of California at Berkeley called xenophobia towards Asians a normal reaction. The university took down the post and apologized, but many in the Chinese community were extremely upset.
We urge everybody to maintain the perspective that this is a public health issue and, you know, to not use it as a way to scapegoat or make sweeping generalizations on anybody, but also for institutions to remain accountable to all of their students, to the diverse populations and communities that live in California.
It's really less about who's targeting who, but it's really about the fear itself and how dangerous that can be.
For now, those fears may still seem far away. Thousands of people are expected at this Saturday's Lunar New Year parade, a chance to celebrate Chinese American culture. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
The United States is restricting passenger flights that include people who have recently traveled from China. The Department of Homeland Security said it will direct the arrival of U.S. citizens who have been in China within 14 days of their return to one of 11 designated airports to undergo enhanced screening. Meanwhile, the number of U.S. cases has risen to at least 11. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more.
The U.S. has started a 14-day mandatory quarantine for U.S. citizens returning from China's coronavirus hotspot, the Hubei province, where the capital city of Wuhan is located. They are being flown to 11 designated airports where travelers are undergoing extra screening. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Nancy Messonnier.
At those airports, they will be screened for fever, cough, difficulty breathing. If symptomatic, American citizens and those who are exempt will be transferred for further medical evaluation. If asymptomatic, American citizens and those who are exempt will be subject to a mandatory 14-day quarantine at or near that location.
The U.S. has also imposed bans for most non-citizens who traveled to China within the past 2 weeks. Messonnier says America is preparing for a potential pandemic.
This is the first time in over 50 years that CDC has issued a quarantine order.
The Pentagon said Monday the CDC and Health and Human Services have requested housing for up to 2,000 individuals that may need to be quarantined.
The requirements were generally that in blocks of rooms of 250, so that can provide some sort of not overly dispersed, so that you have some sort of continuity of having enough support staff in the area, access to quality and hospital systems within the local community that the CDC and HHS have identified that can handle the potentiality of anyone who is comes down with virus and being able to be moved off to an off-base health facility.
At a joint news conference Monday with Uzbekistan's foreign minister in Tashkent, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. plans to have more flights heading to China to bring Americans back home from the Hubei province.
We anticipate that they will happen in the next handful of days, and we'll return those American citizens. We may well end up bringing some citizens back from other countries as well. We're working through the details on that. We're working closely and hand-in-hand with the Chinese government to try and resolve what is now this global epidemiological challenge.
On Monday, the Chinese Foreign Ministry criticized the U.S. and other countries for some of the steps being taken in response to the outbreak.
Some countries have taken travel and trade restriction measures, including preventing foreigners who visited China over the last 14 days from entering, denying entry to Chinese citizens who hold passports issued by China's Hubei province, denying visas, and canceling flights. As mentioned by Dr. Todoros, we need facts, not fear. We need science, not rumors. We need solidarity, not stigma.
Now more than 30 countries are restricting travel from China. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Facing growing strike action by medical workers, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam defended her government's policy in preventing the spread of the new coronavirus Tuesday.
I certainly would not agree with the allegation that we are sort of not addressing this public health concern adequately. And certainly I don't agree with the allegation that we are putting politics above public health. This is a public health situation.
Striking medical workers in Hong Kong are demanding officials shut the border with mainland China to everyone except Hong Kong residents to prevent the spread of the new coronavirus. Lam has refused to meet the medical workers' demands, but did order the closure of additional border crossing points Monday, leaving only three ways for people from mainland China to enter Hong Kong. The other demands include assurances that isolation wards are well-staffed and disciplinary action will not be taken against strikers. With much of China shutting down, we were wondering how this has affected trade between China and the rest of the world, particularly trade between China and the United States. To find out, I contacted Phil Levy, a man well-informed about this, with a background as a high-level economist and now the senior economist at the shipping company Flexport.
You are a former federal government economist working under George W. Bush. Now you are in the freight business. And how is the freight business being affected by the coronavirus?
Biggest thing we can point to right now is you've seen lots and lots of flight cancellations. These are generally passenger aircraft flying in and out of China. What many people don't realize, those passenger aircraft also have belly cargo, as they describe it, which is that it's not just your suitcases down there. There's also pallets of goods being shipped back and forth. And that is a fair bit of air capacity that has been taken offline, in many cases through March, April, in one case even through May.
So what happens to ships going back and forth? Have they been canceled at all? Have they been detoured in any way?
So far, we're not getting reports of ships being canceled. However, it's important to remember that that's one component in a supply chain. So what we have not seen really come back as expected is trucking, which means if ships are dropping containers at ports, for example, those they need to have sort of new containers brought for loading or old containers cleared from the ports. In China, we're not seeing that as much. The thing to remember, and the reason it's a little bit tricky to give a full assessment, is every year, thankfully most of them without a major viral outbreak, every year you have the whole country of China mostly shut down for Chinese New Year. And this happened just around that time. So we were seeing almost no economic activity in China last week, but that was what everybody expected to see. It's this week and into next when you're starting to notice the difference, when the factories were supposed to come back online, the air freight was supposed to pick up perhaps by this coming weekend, and the question then is what will happen with that resumption? Will it take place as usual? And I think the answer is very likely to be no.
Well, one would think that was the case, and that leads to my next question. We have many people listening to this right now who are living in China. They are blocked at almost every move they make. Why isn't shipping affected?
So it certainly will be for the other links in the chain. If you're talking about ocean freight, which is the bulk of the way goods move around the world, ocean freight, you can have crews in shipping vessels who have relatively little interactions with ports, and you have a lot of this stuff automated where you can have cranes taking containers on and off of ships. And so that part can proceed. I hope I didn't say that this is unaffected, because we have seen some reductions in sailings. We've seen lower capacity usage on some of the ships, but it has not been as dramatic as it has been with air. It will very much be affected if the factories don't reopen on schedule, and if you don't have, for example, truckers moving goods around internally in China.
What is the overall feeling of the shipping industry about this?
Apprehension. There's a lot of uncertainty about how this is going to play out. We just did a survey of our customers and asked the question, when do you think that factories are going to reopen? The norm probably would have been this week. You had, I think, roughly a third of the respondents say next week, a third said the week after, and about a third said later than that. Now, there can be legitimately different answers for different people. They may know very well what's happening, but there's just a lot of uncertainty about what's going on.
How much of the reduction in freight and freight traffic is due to not so much the coronavirus, but to U.S.-China trade?
Well, you're right. This is actually coming at a time when you were already going to have a couple serious challenges to the logistics and the freight business. One, as you mentioned, you had a trade war that was going on, and that trade war, although there was an agreement in January, that didn't end the trade war. That actually left us with a lot of tariffs in place. So we already had reduced volumes because of that. So this is coming at an awkward time, and it's a little bit difficult to disentangle some of those things. There's sort of several categories into which you could sort of place concern. One category is, will production resume? Another category is, will we be able to have the supply chain and the transportation links move the way they're supposed to? And then a third category is, what's going to happen to overall demand? Will this push towards a recession or something of that sort?
That is economist Phil Levy speaking to us via Skype from San Francisco. The United States Senate held a vote today, a very important vote, whether or not the country's president, Donald Trump, will be thrown out of office on impeachment charges. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has been following this all the way. And Catherine, what happened?
Well, President Trump was found not guilty on both charges or the articles of impeachment that had passed through the Democratic majority U.S. House of Representatives. Both of those articles of impeachment failed in the Republican majority U.S. Senate, with the exception of one Republican senator, Mitt Romney of Utah, who did vote against the president of his own party, who said that he was guilty of abuse of power.
This was expected, was it not?
This is an outcome that was very much expected from the beginning, really, even before the Democratic House voted to pass those articles of impeachment. It was known that it would be extremely difficult to get these articles of impeachment past the Republican majority in the U.S. Senate. That's indeed what ended up happening. But as many of the House impeachment managers have been saying today, two reporters, including me, they are going to continue with investigations into President Trump, likely leading up to a court order compelling former National Security Advisor John Bolton to testify.
Well, they can't impeach again, can they? Or can they?
There's nothing to say that they cannot impeach the president again. But remember that we are in a presidential election year when Democrats do not want to step over themselves. They don't want to tire voters out with the back and forth partisan bickering on Capitol Hill. They want to move ahead. They need to move ahead from a Iowa caucus that really no clear winner emerged from in the Democratic Party. They need to solidify their voters. They need to move on to November so that they can beat Donald Trump in a reelection campaign. Not entirely sure how much continuing investigations would really help their case on that front.
Catherine Gibson is VOA's congressional correspondent and has done yeoman work throughout all of these investigations. Thank you, Catherine. Get some rest after this.
Thank you so much.
Some 3,700 people are facing at least 2 weeks locked away on a cruise liner anchored off Japan after health officials confirmed on Wednesday that 10 people on that ship had tested positive for coronavirus and more cases were possible. It follows a steep rise in deaths in China and airlines suspending flights to Hong Kong, with the virus affecting people in more than 20 countries. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy has more on that.
A cruise ship in Japan carrying nearly 4,000 people has found cases of the coronavirus. Several people have already tested positive, but the number could still rise as hundreds await their results. Healthy passengers are now in quarantine on the ship and will have to stay on for 14 days. Sick passengers, meanwhile, were taken to a medical facility by the Japanese Coast Guard. News of the outbreak is spreading fast across the world. At its epicenter in Wuhan, local media have said buildings like an exhibition center and a gym are being transformed into makeshift hospitals. It comes as the death toll nears 500, while around 25,000 people have been infected. Video obtained by Reuters showed hospitals in Wuhan at maximum capacity. Long lines of people were waiting outside a local hospital. Inside, meanwhile, the eyewitness video showed a crowded waiting room. As the fast-spreading outbreak shows no signs of slowing, spreading to every region of China. Its capital, Beijing, home to 22 million people, has turned into a ghost town. Authorities are ordering people to stay home to try to contain the outbreak. Videos from the sprawling metropolis show empty subways and deserted shopping malls, fueling concerns about the knock-on effect to businesses and the wider economy.
Reuters' Michelle Hennessy with that report. Thank you for staying with us for VOA Asia Weekend. In Washington, I'm Ira Melman. Remember to stay up to date on what's happening in the world by checking voanews.com and our plethora of digital platforms.